This is episode number 765 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we'll be talking about Chris Hardwick, Connecticut Gamer Con, Avon Con, and some of the international comics that Matt's wife brought him home from her recent trip. Our comics this week will be Super Sons number 1 and Ether number 1, and our Out of the Long Box this week will be Wild Dog number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, and I just started to think. I remember we recorded a show after I dropped off my daughter at Logan Airport, and how the sign for the Mass Pike didn't bring me to the Mass Pike,
right?
And it led to a two hour tirade of me being lost, screaming at strangers, angering and freaking out my wife, and throwing something out the window in Boston because I hated the city and was angry at it.
So a typical trip to
– anything to Boston.
Although you – it was okay going in.
Yes, it was okay actually going out. So that was dropping off Becky to go to Costa Rica. Now going –
oh, right.
So going –
there was two trips.
Yes.
Yeah.
So going into Boston, dropping off my wife and youngest at the airport,
yeah,
and coming home and seeing the sign that said 290 – is it 90? 90 is Mass Pike.
It
right?
is 90,
90 West.
Yes.
And I see it and I drive and I follow it. And then all of a sudden, the next thing I do is I see a sign. I'm in a tunnel. That could lead you anywhere in that city. Then I see a sign that says Worcester, 35 miles. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm there. 15 minutes later, I'm in Worcester. And that happened at the pickup. The pickup was interesting because my wife said, we're at Delta. Come to Delta. So I parked in the non-parking where you could pick up passengers. Got there. I said, when did the plane from Holland arrive? They said, you got to be the international. That's across, right across over there. So I jump on like 8 escalator things, you know, the walks. I'm now like a mile away
people
from
movers.
Where I parked.
Yeah.
And I'm looking over. I can see my car from where I am. It's a matchbox from where I'm looking. And I finally get them and they're like, where's the car? I go, we've got to get through like, we got to go about 15 minutes on these escalator things. And then hopefully the car will still be there because I parked in a no parking zone
sure,
to pick
yeah.
up passengers. So the car was there. However, my wife, who's a New York Giants fan, has a big New York Giants or a license plate that says number one Giants fan.
Mm.
Somebody bent it.
Did they really?
It. Yep. Somebody, because she's like, what happened to my license plate? I'm like, I swear that wasn't like that when I got there.
That is classic
so
Boston.
Somebody grabbed the license plate
yep.
and bent it up as they walked by.
Uh-huh. You're not going to get away with saying you're a New York fan around there.
Nope.
Awesome. That's a great Boston story.
It is.
Do you like Chris Hardwick, Matthew?
I have a little jealousy towards him. So,
what's the jealousy?
The jealousy is he's doing what...
Other than he's doing what we should be...
That's
would
the
love
jealousy.
To do for, okay. All right. Well, that's fair.
That's it?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I remember listening to Chris Hardwick when he had just started the Nerdist podcast.
Yep.
And thinking, this is good. Because at the time, he was from Singled Out. Like, he was a guy who you knew was super talented, but had not caught his big break. And so here he goes and he does this Nerdist podcast, and then that becomes a network and it starts to grow. And then there's Talking Dead and all this stuff.
And car commercials.
Now the dude's everywhere.
Yeah.
He's hosting a show on Comedy Central, Midnight. He's got all this stuff going on. Well, he's got another thing going on now.
Oh, great.
Because apparently doing the Talking Dead show after Walking Dead and... talking after Fear the Walking Dead, that's not enough. They want him doing that show on Sunday nights all year round.
Wow.
So in the off seasons of those two shows, he's going to be doing Talking with Chris Hardwick. So he's getting, so basically now he just has a talk show every Sunday night on AMC, and it will either be about one of the Walking Dead shows or it will be him interviewing other people, kind of like the Nerdist podcast and
freaking
stuff like
hate that.
That guy. Just doing that. They can't give this guy enough money.
Hate the guy. You know, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of it. That is, it's great for him because, again, he's a guy that started out And we talk about how he's doing exactly what we should be doing.
Well, and he used to be on Attack of the Show sometimes too, on when it was G4.
Yep.
You know, before it
hosts all the Doctor Who panels at San Diego Comic-Con. Yeah. Hate the guy.
He is living the dream in terms of a geek media host.
Yeah.
Like, he is absolutely living the dream.
It's going to really...
The problem is he's living all the dreams,
yes,
and he's sucking them up for everybody else, and nobody else gets a chance to live the dream.
I can't wait till he starts doing his own version of Co-op Critics and the Striper podcast.
Yeah. I mean, for crying out loud, buddy, why don't you delegate some of that stuff?
Yeah.
Hey, I already got 3 talk shows that I'm doing. Why don't you let one of these guys do a talk show?
Yeah. What about
it doesn't even have to be us. Just anybody.
What about your family? Does your family want to see you?
Right.
Bull crap.
Crying out loud. So, yep, more talking from Chris Hardwick coming.
Perfect.
Hope you're excited about that. I mentioned before, and I'll just mention again, Connecticut Gamer Con happening the 1st and 2nd of April at Mohegan Sun. Very excited about that. If you haven't heard the episode where I interviewed Mitch Halleck, then that is probably up right now as we speak. And of course, Avon Con on the 22nd of April, Matthew and I will be at the Avon City Library, and we will be doing panels, Matt on Doctor Who, mm-hmm, and myself on creating a good villain. And that is going to be a really, really fun show. So that is that's our news tidbits. But our big story tonight, Matthew, here as we sit in your basement, is that your wife recently went on a trip that you just talked about picking her up from.
Yep.
And she brought you back some international comics.
Yeah. I told her the only thing I wanted. Actually, I told her one thing as she was getting off the plane almost.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I forgot to tell you, could you get me a shirt from Germany? Didn't mention that. But I told her, I said, could you just do me a favor and get a comic book from every country you go to? So I even went on, I found a bunch of stores. I said, hey, when you're in Germany, you're going to be near the Checkpoint Charlie Museum, which they went to. 2 buildings down, there's a comic book store. So what she ended up doing before that was, while they were waiting at the airport for their bus to arrive, and it was a school trip, and there were four schools. 3 schools canceled due to security fears.
Really?
So you had 1 tour guide, 1 50-seat luxury bus, 15 people.
Oh,
so they
that's
were
awesome.
In heaven, and they lived in this bus. What you would do is you'd stay in Germany for 4, like in Berlin for 3 days. Then you would drive through, and they stopped in Dresden for a day. And then so you would take your stuff and you leave it on the bus with you.
Yep.
So with that, you know, my wife's like, I literally sat in 2 seats by myself, put my feet up, and then across from me in the other seats were my luggage. No worries, no hassles, no anything.
Yep.
So the first thing she got was she stopped off in Germany at a coffee place to get coffee. They happen to have comic books there. Her plan, she had this whole better plan than I did. She goes, I want to get the same comic in every country. And I thought, perfect, that'd be really cool.
Sure.
So I said, as long as I collect it, I don't care what it is, just you can get it. So she ended up in Germany getting Star Wars, which is, it's a Star Wars number 18, but it was a C-3PO solo story lettered by Joe Caramagna about how C-3PO got his red arm. Now, Joe and I have talked about this story together at nauseam, and we won't share it with anybody because we don't want anybody to get mad at us or anybody in trouble. So as we talked about this, I sent him a picture of it. But the whole comic is in German. All the ads are in German. And it's the same exact story that you would see. The interesting thing, when she got the receipt and went to the rate of exchange, she basically paid $5 for 2 comic books.
Huh.
Another one was, the guy suggested if we wanted a German comic published in Germany, Perry Rodan, which is sort of like a space adventure story.
Uh-huh.
That's all in German. And the creative team, Kai Hertz is the author, and Marcio Costello is the pencilist. Colorist is Michael Atea. So I'm going to be taking a look at that more in detail, and I'm going to do a review on the website.
Because awesome.
I can translate it. You can go on. It may be a little cumbersome, but you can go on and find any translators. Babelfish, you could type everything in and get what you want. So another couple books that she got me in Poland, she got me Astrana Zagwaka Hitlera, which is basically the Battle of the Bulge in Polish.
Which is right up your alley.
Right up my alley. So very interesting stuff. When she was in Hungary, she got a Star Wars comic, which was the first issue of the Darth Vader series.
So basically what we're learning is the Star Wars comics are everywhere around the world.
Star Wars and The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So she picked me up Star Wars. And that one was, it's a lot of fun reading that one, especially when you start seeing the ads for other things in there, like, Brian, Spider-Man.
Nice.
There's Spider-Man ads in here. He is called Spider-Man. And then she got me a Bart Simpson comic. And it's really funny because I have all these, and you're seeing them in the different languages. You're also seeing the ads in here For magazines, because Panini is the company that does a lot of the comic books there.
Yep.
And they do those great sticker books that we used to get, the sports ones. And
I used to like the sticker books.
Yep. And they have one called Just Kick It, which is a soccer magazine.
Nice.
It's not even translated.
Did you order it?
It's called Just Kick It.
You got to order it.
Yep. Then we had a Bart Simpson one also. Then in Poland, in Krakow, at a gas station, she picked up Star Wars Comics, K-O-M-I-K-S, which is the entire Poe Dameron series.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. And you're getting like a trade paperback one, and I'm reading it going, how much is $19.99 in Polish? And she said it was like $13.
Huh.
So that was pretty good. Ninjago? Is that how you pronounce
Ninjago.
That one?
Ninjago.
Ninjago. Ninjago she got me in the Czech Republic. She couldn't find any com. Oh, no. I'm sorry. This was not the Czech Republic. This was, I believe, in Holland. She picked me up this one. And I haven't opened it yet. I probably won't open it, but it comes with a little Lego guy in there. And she, this was the best one. This was, I believe, in Belgium when she goes, I can't find a comic book store or anything anywhere. She stopped at a gas station and then sent me a message going, do you have any Donald Duck comics? Because she knows how I have to have, like, I create tabs for everything.
Sure.
And she goes, do you have any Donald Duck comics? I go, I don't have anything Donald Duck. And she goes, well, I got you one. So it is Kessir Donald. Now, this Donald Duck comic was like $3 and comes with a little action figure called Little Helper, and it's a little light bulb head guy.
Nice.
So you got all this stuff in there. So pretty, pretty cool stuff.
So that basically is starting your Donald Duck collection.
It's, you know what this, it, not my Donald Duck collection, but now I'm like, I need comics from every country in the
world. You and I both know that the next time you go to a show and they have a 50-cent bin or a 25-cent bin full of Donald Duck comics, you're all over it.
You're right, because I am a completist.
Yeah.
So that was a fun trip. I've also been
eating. Good. It sounds like she had a great time.
Yeah, they had a great time.
I mean, the limited time she had while not looking for comic books for
yes.
you.
Yes. It got to the point, too, where like all the other students were looking for comic books, too.
Sure.
So that was a lot of fun. But they had a great time. They were safe, brought back a ton of candy. They also bought a nesting doll in Poland. That was a Pittsburgh Penguin one. So it was really, she's like, that's kind of odd to find a Pittsburgh Penguin nesting doll in Poland.
Yep.
So she ended up getting that for us. And a lot of chocolate. A lot of chocolate.
Now, she won this trip on the Pig and the Poke, right?
Yes, that was it. Pig and a Poke. Yes, because she knew that it was the oh, boy, what was the question they won on?
I forget what it was.
I believe they're the primordial tracks are a housing development outside of Cairo. And then it was the upper neurons. Oh, did you say upper? It's lower neurons. So, yeah, this was a school trip.
So, that's awesome.
Not Pig in the Poke. Would have been better on Pig in the Poke.
I did not have a school trip that cool. We went to Quebec, yeah. Which was awesome.
Yeah.
But not a trip to the magnitude of the one that your wife just went on.
Sturbridge Village every freaking year.
Sturbridge Village. That's awesome.
Every year.
Well, that's cool. So maybe you could put, if you do a write-up on the website, put a couple pictures up of
yep.
some of the books that you got, especially
yep.
some of the ones that you cannot find around here.
Yeah.
So cool. So there you go. That's your news. Now let's jump into comics. And we both read one of the same books this week.
Yeah, that was something that I was excited to talk about. Apparently you were excited to talk about. We both got different covers.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did. How about that?
Yep.
And that is Super Sons, number one from DC Comics. Now, I picked this up. I am at least 7 issues behind in Superman. I've been buying it every time I go to the shop, but I'm so behind in my reading right now. I probably talked about this before. I now have a full short box of books that
yeah.
I haven't read yet. That's crazy.
I'm almost there.
Like, I'm at the point where I want to stop buying them until I catch up, but I can't stop buying them.
Can't do it, man.
So I keep coming home with books, and I'm like, I don't have... So this was like my entry point back into Batman and Superman, because I'm a couple issues behind on Batman mm-hmm. as well. But my interest in opening this was seeing, could I read this book even though I was behind on those books and still have a good idea of what was going on? And I feel like the answer to that question is yes.
Yep. Peter J. Tomasi wrote it. Jorge Jimenez did the art on this one. Alexandro Sanchez was a colorist. Bob Lee was the letterer. And I believe you got the Jimenez and Sanchez cover. I got Dustin Nguyen.
Okay.
That's who I got.
Yeah, and mine has the two kids sort of in the coming out of the foreground, and in the background you sort of have this image of their fathers there.
Yep, and mine is them just standing there all cheeky and looking for trouble. Much yeah. like we find in the comic.
That is absolutely what we find in the comic. Now, I did not understand the prologue at all.
I was wondering if you did because, you know what I read this as? That Twilight Zone story.
I did too.
Where you have that kid that's like...
It's a Good Life. That's yeah. the name of it. Yeah, it is, without a shadow of a doubt, by far the scariest Twilight Zone episode that was ever created. Yes, that's exactly what I thought this was.
And I think that that's kind of what they're going to.
Okay.
Good. Until you turn the page and you see that it's a movie set.
But maybe I do understand. But you see that it's a movie set. Okay, so we should probably explain. So if you haven't seen the episode of The Twilight Zone called It's a Good Life, it is a horrifying episode where basically in middle America, there is a young boy who has the powers of a god. And you don't know throughout the entirety of the episode if the rest of the world even still exists or not. But he has this small town completely under his control because he can read people's minds. And if they think bad thoughts about him or if they say bad things about him, he can turn them into things. He can banish them into the cornfield, which God, Lord knows what that even means. Yeah. But you just hope it's just an innocent banning into the cornfield.
I hope it's just corn.
Yeah. But... it is horrifying. The milkman shows up one day and he is out front creating some sort of mutant creature that he then just wishes away. Like, and everybody who sees all these horrifying things that he does has to say, that's really good that you did that.
Yeah.
That's really good that you did that. That's a good thing that you made right there. That's really impressive. Even though they're horrified. And the tension in that episode is so freaking good.
Yeah.
I say it all the time. The Twilight Zone is the greatest television show ever created. There will never be another show that even comes in the same universe as that show as being – it is the greatest show ever created. And I've never seen a bad episode of The Twilight Zone. Whenever the marathon's on, I watch it. I have all the episodes on DVD. You can watch them, I still think, on Netflix. Yeah. They have the entire series. If you have not immersed yourself in The Twilight Zone, do so immediately.
Yeah.
I wouldn't start with that episode because that's a high bar.
Yeah.
You know, that's a top 10 episode of The Twilight Zone, and it is the scariest one.
I have a great idea. I know we've completely digressed from what we've been talking about. Why don't you and I put up a top 5 Twilight Zone episodes and have people watch them, comment on them, and see what they think their top 5 episodes are?
I'm going to take that a step further. I'm going to take that idea... I'm going to put it in a blender with my idea, and then we're going to have a smoothie of the idea that we have moving
forward. What do
we got? What if we do a segment on the show about the Twilight Zone every now and again?
Yeah.
And we'll come up with a clever name for it. But there are so many episodes of the Twilight Zone, and they're so good that each episode deserves to be talked about on its own. Like, we could do a whole summer watching project on it. We could do a whole year-long watching project on it. But there are at least 20 episodes of The Twilight Zone that we could just talk about ad nauseum.
When the bullet hits the bone from The Twilight Zone song.
When the bullet hits the bone.
But nobody will probably get that.
I got that. I might have to edit that out. that was such a bad idea. I might have to edit that out.
I do like this idea, though. I do like this idea.
Well, okay, we're going to do something with The Twilight Zone. But the bottom line is, as you open the first issue of Super Sons, what you are presented with is what looks like a family of sorts who are sitting around watching TV, and you have one of the kids saying, "Can I have some more of your popcorn, Archie?" And you have this other guy who says, "No, you finished yours already." And then he says, "Hmm," and he turns around and he says, "Sure, Reggie, you can have the whole bowl." And then the kid says, "Mom, my feet are cold." And she comes over and puts a blanket on him. "Oh, is that better? Sarah, could I use another pillow behind my head. Do you want it puffed up or do you want it flat?" And he says, "Hey, Dad, can I borrow the car tomorrow?" Yeah, tomorrow's fine. Would you like me to take it to the car wash first?" "Oh, you guys are the best." And then he stands up and he says, "How about a group hug?" And everybody kind of looks at each other. And then he screams, "I said group hug." And they come over to hug him. And he's like, "We're the closest family ever." And then you see what looks to be a television studio that has cameras pointed at this kid, and you see monitors that are on and all this kind of stuff. But what I thought was interesting about that is there's no one there.
No.
There's no one manning any of the equipment
that's
there.
No cameras, no nothing.
Which brings up another Twilight Zone episode where a guy walks into work one morning And then he's having a conversation with the secretary, and all of a sudden somebody yells cut. And he turns around, and there's a freaking director.
I don't remember that one.
And his life is a TV show, and he's being directed as if he's an actor in his own life. Amazing. That's what I'm saying. It's unbelievable.
Way too many.
The Twilight Zone is unbelievable. So anyways, I'm glad that you read it that way, because I read the prologue, and I'm like, all I get from that is the It's a Good Life vibe, and I have no idea what that's about. And then they don't return to that.
Nope.
For the rest of the episode. Or the rest of the issue. So then we cut to now, where you have Superboy and Damian, Robin, who are running through the woods, fleeing what appears to be robotic evil versions of themselves.
Yep. And what's been going on in the other series is that within the Superman, actually within both of them, is that Damian has decided to take it upon himself to train Jonathan. And Jonathan, although is way more powerful than Damian, and he's a few years older than Damian, he's a little more, I don't want to say he's immature, but compared to Damian, he's a baby.
He's a young kid who has superpowers and doesn't yet know how to control them, whereas Damian is basically trained assassin from birth.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I could see that their skills are at a different level at this point. And I kind of like that, you know,
yeah.
Because I think when you talk about the idea of Super Sons as a series, I think that there's probably some people who roll their eyes at that,
yep,
and think, oh, okay, well, they each have a son now, so we got to give them their own book. Like, we need another book with these two kids in it and stuff like that. But I feel like they, in this first issue, they're doing it justice.
I think so.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. So you see him running through the woods, and at one point, Damian says, stop. It's time for Robin and Superboy to take a stand. And Superboy says, well, why are you saying your name first? Well, because I'm older. Well, I'm taller. Shut up.
Yeah.
So you get that banter between the two of them. Now we cut back a couple days earlier, and you have Jonathan, who is walking out of his house and getting ready for the school bus, and the door opens, and he says, well, you're not the regular driver. And the guy says, I'm filling in. The other guy's out sick. So he gets in, they get on the bus, and he's talking to one of his friends, Kathy, and as they're sitting there talking, he's seeing a kid getting bullied. So his first instinct is to get up, and he gets up out of his seat and he starts walking over. And you can tell that the kids that are doing the bullying are probably like a grade or two older. And first of all, let me just say the artwork, right? Absolutely amazing.
It is.
It's absolutely amazing. Again, Jorge Jimenez, just wonderful. And the colors by Alejandro Sanchez. Fantastic.
Yep, great.
The
great
facial
look.
Expressions, the emotion, the look on Jonathan's face when he first stands up from the seat, to me, is such a Clark Kent, you know,
yes,
look that I just absolutely loved it. Because you're getting to almost relive Clark's being young and having his powers. You know what I mean?
Because in the world that we live in...
Kevin Costner here to shame him and make him feel bad about wanting to help people.
Yeah. In the comic, Superman was never Superboy. Since the 80s, he never was Superboy.
Right.
So we are getting a chance to have Superboy again.
So he's about to do something when you have the bus driver turn around and say, sit down back there and cut out the nonsense. So he sits back down. They go to school later that day. And he gets the kid that was being bullied, and that child's name is, I forget, did they say his name?
Yeah, I don't even know if they say his name.
So he's now with his friends outside, and he's saying, we're going to challenge those little kids to a snowball fight.
An innocent snowball fight, a better way to solve a problem than fisticuffs.
A way for us to get revenge without anybody really getting hurt.
Yep.
And all of a sudden the older kids come up and say, oh, don't worry about picking sides. We already picked ours. And you see that they have arms full of snowballs, and they start throwing them. And as soon as the kids start running, one of their friends get hit in the head, and you see that the kid was hit by a rock.
And that really upset me when I saw that, because I remember being part of that when we were younger, and he gets hit in the head, and right now when and it's just awful because the kid looks up. I remember when my daughter got hit in the head with a rock, and she looked at me and said, what just happened? Because it knocked the senses out of her.
Yep.
And all of a sudden this kid's like, my head's bleeding. They put rocks in the snowballs. And then all of a sudden you see Clark with that look of, okay, now I'm really getting pissed.
Yeah, and he starts to Jonathan, you mean, not
or
Clark.
Jonathan. Yep, Jonathan starts getting
so
a little
he starts
pissed.
Taking off his glasses because you can see he's actually getting ready to use his heat vision when all of a sudden a huge, gigantic pile of snow comes falling on them from the roof and absolutely just clobbers all of the older kids. And as he looks up, he sees the bus driver standing on the rooftop. And then that's one of the coolest things is that he runs to an alley and he's like, what are you doing at my school? And the bus driver says, oh, I was bored. I wanted to see how the other half lives. And you see him take a mask off and it's Damien.
And he's got the he's got like stilts
on. He's got like
boots.
Stilts on. So basically he dressed up as the bus driver, drove him to school just so he could basically spy on him. And then he says, you faked being my substitute teacher from third period.
Because you remember him? Because he pulls out another mask.
Yeah.
And the thing that I was cracking up about was this was very Unknown Soldier-ish from the comics when
I was
great.
A kid.
He, you know, the masks and all of that sort of stuff. And then Jonathan is just getting a great kick out of it. He's laughing because he's like, you know, what did you do when you were 8 years old? Did you start driving when you were eight?
And he's like, why aren't you in school? What's going on? He's like, I'm homeschooled.
Yep.
And so it's to me, I thought that these pages right here are almost like the core of this book.
Yep.
Because the relationship that these two have, you get to see. And even the way that Damien is drawn is a very sort of impish way that he's drawn, which I think is really cool. And I loved that moment.
Yep. So you have later you have Damien's back in Gotham City and they're talking, you know, he's talking and all of a sudden, you know, what's his name? Like Alfred brings something down. Damien does this flip in the air to grab it. He's like, oh, finally. And he grabs a bottle of water. And then Batman is talking to him saying, where are you going? What are you doing? And he's like, well, heading out with you. And he goes, well, you're not heading out with me. You have studying to do. You need to stay home. So you're seeing, although he is homeschooled, he has homework he's got to do. He's got assignments he's got to do. And Batman is telling him all this stuff. And he's like, you're being unreasonable. And he goes, not about your studies, I'm not. And then he takes off.
Well, he says to him, did you give me your word about your studies? And Damien's like, yeah. And he says, then keep it. And he drives away.
Yep.
And so you're seeing, yeah, he's not giving him any mercy there. Of course, that doesn't necessarily stop him.
No. And then you go to the Kent household. Where they are playing cards around the house. They're talking about their day. And Clark is like, so, anything go on today in school? Like a snowball fight? And he's like, well, yeah, maybe a couple. You know, we did throw some pretty hard after a rock hit Alan. So Alan was a kid's name. And he's like, you know, you got to be careful about what you're doing. So they had a great moment. But you're seeing the difference, not even so much what they said to each other, but you're seeing the contrast to what Jonathan grows up with and what Damien grows up with, what Jonathan wants. When Clark is telling him, he's like, you know, I want you to be a hero when it counts. And he's putting his hand on his shoulder, and he's getting the approval of his father. And you're seeing the complete weird relationship between the two.
Well, and you're also seeing the way, I mean, look at the way that those pages are colored too,
yes,
right?
So you have very colorful.
It's very dark and sort of
cave-like.
Almost, yeah, just very dark on those pages. Then you turn it over and everything's very bright because they're sitting around the table playing cards together. And then you have a moment where, you know, Clark has to speed off because there's something going on with the Justice League. And he gives Lois a kiss and he heads out. And it's like it's all very bright and cheery.
Yep.
And look at this great relationship that mom and dad have and stuff like this. And so you can see how Jonathan has this wholesome existence.
Yes.
And then he goes to bed. And not 2 seconds later,
he gets a visitor.
He says, hope you remember to floss, Johnny boy. So you have what I like about this book is that Damien is like haunting him.
Yes.
Like every time he's just going through his business and Damien is just always there to sort of haunt him and always keeping an eye on him. Like it's a wonder he's not paranoid about Damien always sort of being around the corner.
Yeah.
And of course, Damien decides to lure him out of bed because he's got a job for them.
Yep. So when he wakes up and he gets he's ready to I-beam him and he's like, I could have blasted you. And he goes, yeah, I would have dodged the blast, incapacitated you with a well-placed kick to the solar plexus. So no matter how strong he is, Damien still might have the upper hand on him. And it's a lot like how Batman deals with all the other powered heroes. He doesn't have powers, but
he outplans them.
Yes.
He outstrategizes them. Yes. He's three steps ahead of them. And And Damien basically lures Jonathan out by saying, there's something, somebody's been breaking into LexCorp facilities, and I think you need to come with me. And so he convinces him to sneak out of the house. And the next thing you know, the two of them are outside LexCorp. And there's this great thing where you have Damien making fun of Jonathan because he can't fly yet.
Yep.
Because he's just jumping from one way to the other. And at one point, Jonathan says, hey, climb on my back and I'll leap across to the building. And he's like, I managed to move across cities and landscapes without your assistance long before you had an S on your chest. And so, of course, he uses a grappling hook and he goes. And the best part is the two of them get to this window where they're going to try and find a way in the building. And they think they're being all sneaky. And someone behind them says, can I help you boys with something? And you see that it's Lex in his power suit
yep.
floating behind him. And that's the way the first issue ends.
And I love the next, Lex.
Which is awesome.
I love this book.
Absolutely.
I thought it was a lot of fun. It did bring back a lot of the memories of Young Justice, when Young Justice first came out. And it really taps into, I think Tomasi knows these characters because he is definitely playing both sides perfectly. I just love the contrast between the two.
Yeah, he really, it is a really, really good book. And the cool thing is that if you have not been reading Batman and you haven't been reading Superman and you haven't been reading Justice League, at least from this first issue, you don't need to have.
Yep.
Like, you'll be just fine picking up this issue. I still want to know what the heck that prologue was
yes.
about, though. And
I'm sure
assuming
we'll find out
a little bit about it as we go into the next one. So now we're going to jump over to Dark Horse. And we're going to talk about a new series that's a few issues old now from Matt Kent and David Rubin. Matt Kent is the writer, and David Rubin does all the art and letters. It's edited by Daniel Chabon. It is called Ether. And Matt Kent tells stories that are really fantastical
yes.
and very out there. And this story is it's no change from that. It's no different than any of that stuff. So in Ether, you have this main character by the name of Boone Dias, and he fancies himself to be a scientist who travels between our world and a place called the Ether. And as you open the first issue of this, you have him walking through this place called the Crossroads, which is a gateway between our Earth and the magical realm of the Ether. And he's saying, you know, maybe I'm addicted to it. I just can't get enough of this place, and I'm very prepared when I go in. And you see that he's got a radio that lets him radio back to Earth. He's got this little container he has for field specimens. He says scarf doubles as breathing filter to avoid magical contaminants. And as he's walking through this crossroads, which is just sort of this in-between place, he runs into this gigantic beast who looks he looks almost like a gorilla. It reminds me a bit of Solovar. And he says, I'm Glum. I'm the gatekeeper of the crossroads. Speak your destination, bub. And Boone is like, do you have to say that every time I come here? And he's like, it's my job. It's protocol. You know where I'm going. It's always Agartha, which I'm assuming is the city that he travels to in the ether. He says, purpose of your journey? Research. He says, you know this. It's always research. I'm defining how the supernatural works. I'm making order from chaos. So basically, what the premise of this book is you have this guy who travels from our world to this other quote-unquote magical world, but he is a man of science. And his job is to basically go there and scientifically chronicle everything that's happening and basically show that it's not magic. It's all scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his approach as he goes there. And he says, okay, well, your request is approved. Prepare yourself. And he's like, oh, why do you have to send me this way? And he says, you know, the only way to send him to the place where he's going is to pick him up and kick him in the rear end. And that jettisons him to wherever he's going from the crossroads. And so he gets kicked in the rear end and he ends up in the capital city of the ether. And when he gets there, he turns around and Glum is standing next to him. And he's like, what's going on? He's like, well, this is going to be a little different this time. And he says, what are you doing? Why do you come here? He's like, well, something bad has happened in the city. The mayor asked me to personally escort you. And then you get basically a tour of Boone walking through this magical city. And he walks through a bazaar where there's all of these different types of creatures that are selling things at this open air market. And it's just like you've got like these floating jellyfish flying through the air. He stops by one shop and this guy says, oh, you know, I'll give you something if you let my bird sing to you. And you find out that the bird singing to you like makes you throw up as soon as you hear the bird's voice. But he's he's going through and he's talking to these guys and he's looking at their different wares. And as he's looking at them, he's kind of explaining what they are from a scientific standpoint. And so as they travel across the city, they get to a tower where when they go inside and they go up to the top room, there is a protector of the city who is known as the Blaze. And this is her inner chamber. And they get up to the Blaze and they open the door to her room. And Boone finds out that the reason that he's been brought here is because she has been murdered. So he's been brought in as this sort of objective third party to try to investigate the murder of their protector. And all I can, it's basically like, she's like Thor. Like she's like this mythical, and she's got this long flowing blonde hair. And so she reminds me of the current incarnation of Thor as she in her, and she's dead there. And so he's looking around and he's looking for forensic evidence of what might have killed her. And they find what they believe is a magic bullet. And when you look at it, it's actually a living creature. This magic bullet is like this little tiny creature. And they're talking about how those kinds of things are illegal in the ether and all of this kind of stuff. And he ends up going to this great library to do research on what he just found. And you run into another character who is basically looking like he might be the villain in this particular place. And then when his initial visit is over, Boone gets kicked in the rear end again, and he ends up in Venice, Italy at present day. And he lands on the ground in the middle of the street and people just kind of look at him. And you see that he is basically homeless and living on the streets. So in our world, he is this guy who, which immediately makes you think of like, how many people have you seen who might be suffering from mental illness or something like that, who are talking about, I go to this magical place called the ether, and I'm there to scientifically document what's happening over there. And you see that here he is, he's living on the street here, and his existence here is like crouching in an archway where he makes his home, and all he has is his belongings that are on him. And he's talking about how he's so tired. And then he has a flashback to years ago when he was doing a lecture. And he was clearly like some speaker and some professor at a university or something like that. And he's talking about how magic does not exist. He's talking about, you know, we must not fall down the rabbit hole of mysticism in faith. Do you know what I have faith in? I have faith in numbers, data, information. You know, I have faith that every question, even the question of magic, has an answer. And you see how he met the woman that he fell in love with by the name of Hazel. And you see the beginnings of their relationship. And that is how the first issue ends. And you also notice that Hazel is not with him anymore in the beginning of this story. So, I mean, this book, stunningly gorgeous, amazing vistas, the creature design, then the emotion that's conveyed. But at its core, it's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
It's a murder mystery in this alternate world that this guy from our world has been going into to try and scientifically define. And everything that's set up in the first issue just leaves you immediately wanting to read the second issue. Now, the great news is I think they're up to issue 3 or 4 now in this series. I just started reading it and I was absolutely blown away. So if you have not checked out Ether yet, then you should absolutely be reading it. It's great.
Very good. So now we are taking a trip in time for the...
Oh, we're going back for the Out of the Long Box, Matthew. And we are going back to a character that we have been talking about a lot as he pertains to Arrow, and that is Wild Dog.
Yeah, so Wild Dog was created, the first issue, I should say, September of 1987. This is following Crisis, and DC was really throwing a lot of stuff out there.
That's 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 30 years ago this character was introduced.
Yep. When you think about that, it makes you want to puke and not even talk about it.
I know. Now I just want to end the show.
Yep. All done. Bring on Mitch. So what seemed to be going on at the time was 1987. And it was interesting. Online today, I was talking to John Cimino a little bit about Legend of the Dark Knight or Dark Knight Returns and how comics went so ultra real at that time in history. This was a book that was trying to tap into the real world, but not be so real worldish where it was losing that younger audience that they could get. So
right.
We start out and it says, these are the cities, 24 communities in the state, in this area divided by one bridge. And it's two cities and they talk about the twin cities, but I don't necessarily think that they call them Minnesota and Minneapolis, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I think those are the two. Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Minnesota are the twin cities, I believe, in our world, in the reality.
Okay.
That's why they're the Minnesota Twins. But I don't think that that's what they're talking about in here. Although they do talk about the nation's heartland. And it says, who is Wild Dog? And it says, we interrupt this program. Creative team, Max Collins is the writer, Terry Beatty, the penciler, Dick Giordano, the anchor, John Workman, letters. And then Mike Gold was the editor on this one. The colorist was Michelle Wolfram. So we have a TV crew and they're going, cute opening. And then, hello, Quad Cities. From Davenport to Port Island, from Moline to Betterhorf. This is Susan King on the QC beat. And you're seeing it's one of those, if you remember, Brian, those 80s TV magazines, those news magazines. We used to have PM Magazine.
Yep.
All those shows, you know, that would bring you the city and all the great things.
Uh-huh.
So you have this woman and she's like, I'm here today, just hours away from the River City Center opening, which is...
By the way, Matthew, you were correct. I just want to state that for the record. Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Nice. Yep. Thank you. So, and of course, it's only because of baseball.
And if anybody didn't understand the Twins logo...
Yes.
That's what the Twins logo is all about.
That's what it is. So this woman is talking about how this project is going to revitalize downtown Davenport. And she's talking about how this is going to happen here and the infrastructure is going to change and grow. And then she's like, and you know what? We're going to talk to somebody who's going to be a big part of this and we'll be right back after this. Then the thing stops and then cue. And then she's like, oh my gosh, how long was that? And he's like, yeah, it's been 2 minutes. And she goes, oh, come on. It's hard for me to get excited about these stupid stories. I need some excitement. You never asked for that. I should be doing different things. I can't believe that I'm going to be covering this stuff. So then the guy that she's going to interview shows up, guy in a nice suit, and she's like, hey, I'm Susan King, and I'm live. And here we are with this guy who's familiar with blah, blah, blah. Please say hello to I'm trying to find his name, something King. No, she's Susan King, but she introduces him, and I'm trying to find – oh, Mr. Newell. Is the guy's name, Mr. Newell. So, Mr. Newell, can you talk a little bit about the great things that you're doing? And he reaches into his pocket and he's like, well, you know what? How about a demonstration instead? And he pulls out one of those old school detonators with the flip antenna and the big red button that says, don't push. And all of a sudden, he pushes the big red button and the building they're standing in front of blows up into a gabillion pieces. And the TV crew is behind going, holy mother, he just blew that sucker up. Then he pulls out a gun. He says, allow me to introduce myself or allow me to take advantage of the smoke and all the confusion, and I would like to address the press. So all of a sudden, these dudes come out with these masks and machine guns, and she's like, is this a terrorist plot and you're taking over a theater? And he's like, oh, no, that's only a prelude to what's going to happen. So they go into this theater, and they sit down, and he's like, we are going to have an interview, and we are going to talk about all the things that are going on. So I'm going to give you an exclusive interview. In case you wanted a little more in your career, this is what we can do. So all of a sudden, the crew is there. They're filming everything. And then one guy's like, look, we got to stop doing this. We can't give them any credit. And the other one's like, are you kidding me? This is going to be the biggest news story of ever. We need to make sure that we're doing this. So then back, you have Ms. King, and she's talking to the guy and saying, so what is going on and what are you looking to do? Now, as he is giving his sort of manifesto about what he's looking for and what he wants. You see a guy sitting and watching TV in a big green chair, and you see him go, ye gods, and he starts to get up and walk away. Then you have somebody else that is a mechanic working on a truck, watching or hearing this report on the radio, and then he just looks and kind of goes the other way. Now you have somebody that is watching it on TV as well, and he picks up a telephone and he says, they struck. What are your instructions? So you're seeing something's going on. Now they've built a perimeter outside. The police are there saying, folks, it's a hostage situation. We can't get the press in here. Nobody should be here. So then as they're trying to hold everybody back, this guy's still giving his spiel and saying, look, you know, we are here. We can help this. We can help this situation. We know what to do. We can help you get out of this. And the cop's like, look, until somebody else shows up, we're not doing anything. And then, they kind of walk away, and then he's like, get these people out of here. So everybody is talking about what they can do to fix this. And then you see sort of off in another panel, somebody is putting on a hockey mask. And this is obviously this is the mid-80s, but by this time, hockey goalies were just getting away from wearing these kind of masks and wearing the masks that they wear now. The Jason Voorhees, I guess, is the best way to put it. He's putting on a mask. He's putting the clip into a machine gun. And then he jumps into a red truck and starts driving towards the police blockade. He drives through the police blockade. You see a bunch of dudes that are standing there outside with machine guns, and he goes flying through, smashes into everything, runs people over, gets out smashing and shooting them. Now, he is wearing – I don't know if this is what Wild Dog wears on the TV show, but he's got camouflage pants, boots, like the army belt, a blue shirt with a red dog on it. Is that – does he wear that?
Yeah, basically in the show, it's a hockey jersey.
Yeah, so it's like that.
And so what you saw in his origin story was that on the day that he – everything in his life changed, he was – coming back from taking his daughter to a hockey game.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was their local team, whatever the name of it is. Maybe it was the Wild Dogs or something. I don't know.
Yep. So this guy goes up and starts taking everybody out, and it's great because the police are like, what is that, another terrorist? And then somebody goes, well, you know what? It might be, but he's shooting the other terrorists, so why don't we just let this guy go?
There you go.
So he goes in there. Wild Dog takes out all the guys. They hear shooting, and he just keeps getting closer and closer, walks up, kicks one in the groin, shoots another two. That guy is over there saying, you know what, I'm the future, you're not the future, and I don't know what you're going to do. And then all of a sudden, Wild Dog jumps down, shoots the other two guys next to him, kicks the other guy in the head, knocks him down, all on TV. And as they're seeing all this, she looks at him and goes, I think I want to interview you. And he goes, look, we need to get you out of here because there may be other people here. So they start walking out. The police are out there. The security is out there. SWAT is out there. And then he grabs her, puts her in the car, and drives off. And they're like, okay, well, I guess he's a bad terrorist because he now just kidnapped her. And she's like, you going to say anything? And then you see that all he did was just want to use her to get out of town, drops her off on by a farm, like out in the middle of nowhere, drops her by a farm. And she thinks, but I promise you one thing, honey. You're my ticket out of this unglamorous burg. You're the story that I've been waiting for. And it says continued next month. From what I can remember, because I only read the first issue, Wild Dog was three or four different people. And the uniform or the red dog and the blue jersey was the football jersey for the school that they all went to.
Oh, interesting.
And that is where – so they all wear the same thing. And then because one of them's a mechanic, he's better at fixing stuff. One of them may be this. One of them may be that. But Wild Dog, I believe, ended up being three or four different people that would be called in to take care of things.
So interesting.
That's Wild Dog.
Huh. And yet he's one character on the TV show.
Yep. So they go into that more and more and more in the other four issues. And then when that miniseries was done – we probably went another 5 or 6 years until Action Comics went weekly.
Uh-huh.
It was an anthology where they had like 10 or 12 stories in each one, 3 or 4 pages each. And Wild Dog was one of those stories.
I love it.
Yep.
That's cool. Then do you have all of the issues?
Yep. And I want a Wild Dog shirt now.
I'm sure. If they haven't released the one already, I'm sure they absolutely will. I'm surprised Geeky Jerseys hasn't done a Wild Dog shirt yet, but there you go. Anyways, that is your Out of the Long Box for this week, and that is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.